everyone. On behalf of AgriLinks, Feed the Future, and the USAID Bureau for Food Security, I would like to welcome you to our webinar today on Catalyzing Action and Agricultural Transformation in Africa, Taking the Pulse of CADAP. My name is Julie McCarty, and I'm with the USAID Bureau for Food Security, and I'll be your webinar facilitator today, so you'll hear my voice periodically, especially during our question and answer session. USAID and BFS are really excited to be hosting this webinar in collaboration with African Union partners and Feed the Future's Africa Lead program. We're excited to help engage a broad audience in taking the pulse on the current status of the Comprehensive African Agriculture Development Program, also known as CADAP, which has been operating for almost 15 years now, and also to share some information about new tools and efforts that seek to leverage this robust African-owned initiative to help catalyze data-driven action towards accelerating improved food security and resilience on the continent. We're also excited to be hosting this webinar on the heels of the 15th CADAP Partnership Platform meeting, which was held in Nairobi last week, and which is an annual continental forum for promoting learning, reflection, and adaptive management among CADAP stakeholders. We have some great experts on the panel to reflect on just how far we've come, what we've learned, and some of the exciting new developments that are taking CADAP into a new phase of implementation. Feed the Future's Africa Lead program will be facilitating this session as part of their overarching mandate to support African Union institutions, member states, and local stakeholders through facilitation, communication, and learning within the CADAP context. Very quickly, before we dive into the content, I just want to orient you to a couple of pieces. First, and most of you have already done so, please do use the chat box to introduce yourselves, to ask questions, and to share resources. We'll be collecting your questions throughout the webinar, and we'll ask as many as we can after the presentations. You'll see that the slides are available for download on the bottom left of your screen, as well as a couple of recommended resources. And lastly, we are recording this webinar, and we'll email you the recording, the transcript, and some additional resources once they're ready. And they will also be posted on AgriLinks. All right, I am going to introduce our first speaker, and then we can get started. So I'd like to introduce Shannon Sarbo, who is the Deputy Chief of Party for Africa Lead, and she supports Africa Lead's continental activities and the activities monitoring, evaluation, and learning elements. And she will be giving a brief introduction to our topic and to our next speaker. So Shannon, please unmute, and we'll see.
Thanks, Julie. Hi, everyone.
Oh, I can hear you.
Can hear me okay? Good morning and good afternoon to everyone who's calling in. We're so pleased to have everybody on the call today. Like Julie mentioned, my name is Shannon Sarbo, and I work on the Africa Lead Project, which is a USAID-funded Africa-wide project that's focused on strengthening leadership, building institutional capacity, and facilitating learning for CADAP implementation at all levels. Today is the first webinar in our final program learning series. And at the end of today's webinar, we'll be sharing some more information about how you can get involved in some of the future events. So to dive right in, CADAP stands for the Continental Africa Agricultural Development Program. And if you're not familiar with it, we're really hoping this webinar will be a useful orientation. CADAP is a program of the African Union that's been in place for almost 15 years. And like Julie mentioned, a lot of momentum has been generated and progress has been made. But today, this continental program still remains largely misunderstood by a variety of agricultural stakeholders. So what we're hoping to do here today is, one, follow up on the CADAP Partnership Platform meeting, like Julie mentioned, it was just held last week here in Nairobi, but also really take this opportunity to update a broad set of agricultural stakeholders on the current status of CADAP. We're really lucky to have some great experts on the line with us here. Ernest Rosendaza with the African Union, Fatmara Sewo from the Economic Community of West African States, we call that ECOWAS, and Augustine Wamboyanju from the African Union Development Agency, who are going to help us reflect on just how far we've come and what we've learned and kind of tee up some exciting new developments that are going to take CADAP into a next phase of implementation. So Africa Lead is facilitating this session as part of our overarching mandate to support the African Union and African stakeholders through facilitation, strategic communication, and learning within the CADIP context. So that's why we are going to be your facilitators today. Next, I'd like to just do a brief run-through of the agenda for today's conversation. I'll introduce my colleague, Robert Uma, in a second, who's going to give us a sort of introduction and an overview of CADIP. Then we'll open it up to panel discussion. We have some pre-programmed questions that we'll tee up for them. And then we'll open it up to you to hear some questions from the audience that Julie and Robert are going to help moderate. And then we'll close and wrap up and have some ideas about how you can get involved in future events. So that's it for now. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Robert Uma. Robert is a senior CADIP policy advisor on Africa Lead, and he's been working very closely with the African Union on many of the topics we're going to discuss today. So over to you, Robert.
Well, thank you very much, Shannon, for that introduction, and thank you, everyone, for joining this webinar. I'm really glad to be here and to speak to all of you about what is a critically important subject in African development, CADAP, that's the Comprehensive Africa Agriculture Development Program. CADAP is Africa's policy framework for agricultural development and agriculture-led development in particular. And CADAP's objectives broadly include the big aims of reducing poverty, increasing the level of food security, providing jobs and incomes, and what you would say are the usual big picture developmental goals, but using agriculture to achieve that. I'm going to take you through the development of CADAP over the years and how it started. And right now on your screen, you should be seeing a timeline. CADAP started about 2003 with what was known as the Maputo Declaration, which was made by African heads of state sitting in Maputo. And they were concerned with some of the big issues in Africa, like the idea that a lot of Africans were still malnourished, and it's still the case now that Africa has about over 20% of the population is malnourished, and the fact that Africa spends a lot of money on food imports. I think current statistics anywhere between $35 to $40 billion a year, and there was a feeling that using agriculture, developing agriculture would be a way to develop broadly the economies of African countries. And during the decade between 2003 and 2014, the focus of CADAP was really to try and encourage faster agricultural growth. In fact, there was a target of 6% growth during that period, the first 10 years of CADAP, and there was a big focus also on trying to encourage African countries to spend more money from their budgets expenditure. In fact, the target was 10%, putting 10% of agriculture expenditure, of national expenditure into agriculture so as to spur agriculture-led growth. And so for those 10 years, the Maputo Declaration was the focal point and created a lot of focus on agriculture, and there was planning and plenty of activities within the continent around policy making for agriculture development, tools and processes and analysis to encourage countries to do more on agriculture. And this went on until 2014, when there was a what you could call a pause and reflect. And 2014 was actually the year of agriculture, and many countries came together and convened by the African Union to reflect on how the first 10 years of CADAP had gone, and some of the lessons of those first 10 years informed our second declaration, which is known as the Malabo Declaration, which brought a more results-focused into CADAP and expanded CADAP significantly to account for what was seen as the multifaceted, multidisciplinary nature of agricultural development. And the Malabo Declaration, and I'll show you what some of the elements are in a moment, helped to rejuvenate, refocus CADAP around some 7 clear goals, which are currently the main targets to achieve those goals by 2025. But one important element of the Malabo Declaration is what was called a biennial review, which simply means a mechanism to measure progress every 2 years. Progress as far as the targets, the objectives of the Malabo Declarations are concerned. And so that's been going on, and we are going to talk about that shortly. So that timeline tells you the evolution of CADAP over the years. CADAP itself, and particularly with the current Malabo Declaration that kind of underpins its implementation, is very closely related to the Sustainable Development Goals, particularly SDG number 2. There's a very close relationship, but it's also very closely related. In fact, it implements an African aspirational vision known as the Agenda 2063, which the first aspiration there is really about about food security, and in particular trying to ensure that there is a prosperous Africa based on inclusive growth and sustainable development, of which one of the most important elements is a healthy and well-nourished citizenry and modern agriculture, increased productivity and production, and environmental sustainability. All of these elements in Agenda 2063 are actually covered in the Malabo Declaration. I did mention that the Malabo Declaration has got 7 broad targets. We call them the Malabo Commitments. And if you do look, I think we're going to post on your screen a copy of the Malabo Declaration for those who are interested. Right on your screen, you have got those 7 commitments, a recommitment to the values and principles of the CADAP process, enhancing increased investment finance into agriculture, which is a deepening of what were the original objectives of CADAP, ending hunger by 2025, cutting poverty by half by 2025, particularly through inclusive agricultural growth and transformation, boosting intra-Africa trade in agricultural commodities and services. Some of you might be aware that we now have in place the Continental Free Trade Area in Africa, which supplements this objective of Objective 5 of the Malabo Declaration. The 6th one is on enhancing resilience of livelihoods and production systems, particularly to climate variability and other shocks. And the final one is strengthening mutual accountability to actions and results. And this links very well to the point I made earlier about a biennial review, a means and a mechanism for measuring performance. In my next slide, I presented something on the biennial review process, which I think is an innovative and data-driven approach to showing how well countries are implementing the Malabo Declaration. The last biennial review was really covering 2017, and it was evaluating country performance. It had indicators across the 7 thematic areas and 23 performance categories, 43 indicators in total. And some of the things we could say about it is that it overall enhances Africa's capacity for knowledge and data generation and management. In a way, it is strengthening the appreciation for data-driven decision-making and for reflection around performance. So this is a new and interesting thing in agriculture development in Africa. It's also helping to institutionalize a system of peer review, where countries look at each other's performance and explain to each other why and why they are not performing as well as they should towards the targets that they committed themselves to in 2014. And this is happening frequently enough on a biennial basis. And the reports are delivered at a very high level to heads of state when they meet in Addis Ababa every 2 years to reflect on ongoing performance. The results of the first biennial review that I just talked about were out for 2017. 47 member states reported. 8 of them were unable to report for various reasons, including issues like conflict, capacity issues, and other things. The performance overall is presented as a summary in terms of a scorecard, where each country has a score that's a kind of a total compilation of all the indicators that shows how far they are from achieving the Malabo commitment. Perhaps I should say at this point that the biennial review was actually measuring performance covering the period 2015 to 2016, and the next one will cover 2017 right up to 2018, so it's going to be up to 2019, and it's going to be released in January 2020. The last biennial review showed that 20 countries were on track. Being on track meant that they have achieved a minimum overall score of 3.95 out of 10. 10 is the total score to be able to say that you're on track to achieving the 2025 goals. So by within the first 2 years, you should have achieved 3.94 if you're going to make it to 10 by 2025. And so 20 countries were on track, but 27 countries were not on track. The average score was 3.6, which is below the required score. And so that was the result, and you can see on that map the countries that were on track and those that weren't and those that had no data. So overall, this is how CADAP is being implemented. It is a unique and interesting development in Africa, and we think, a lot of us, that this is something that's going to be potentially transformative, but CADAP has not been without some challenges. And in the next 20 minutes or so, perhaps more, we are going to have a conversation with the three panelists that were introduced earlier. That's Ernest Ruzindaza from the African Union Commission, the Department of Rural Economy and Agriculture, Fatmata Seywo, who's from ECOWAS, ECOWAS is the regional economic bloc for West Africa. And lastly, Augustine Wamboyamju, who's from the African Union Development Agency, NEPAD. NEPAD is the new partnership for Africa's development. I'll say a little bit more about Ernest, Fatmata, and Augustine. Ernest Ruzindaza spent a lot of time working in the public sector in Rwanda. He was a permanent secretary. He has more than 15 years' experience in managing the agricultural sector at a country level. 7 of those years was PS, actually. And he currently leads the CADAP program at the African Union. And he therefore has a very unique angle to all of this, having worked at country level and having worked at continental level. So we are really happy to have Ernest with us. Fatmata, on the other hand, is from ECOWAS, as I said. She joined ECOWAS in 2014 and is currently the CADAP M&E program officer. Not just CADAP, but actually ECOWAP. ECOWAP is the ECOWAS Regional Agricultural Program. She has plenty of experience as well, particularly in M&E, working under the Directorate of Agriculture and Rural Development in the ECOWAS Commission. She's based in Abuja, Nigeria, and she has been working at all these levels, at continental level, supporting the biennial review and other things, as well as at regional level with a multiplicity of states, both Anglophone and Francophone, and then, of course, at country level. So we are really happy to have Fatmata with us. Last but not least is Augustine Wambo-Yamju, who has, I think, almost 19 years experience in this sector, but more broadly also in program design and implementation, knowledge management, M&E, and coaching. He started off working as a private consultant and has had stints with FAO, RESAX, and the Global Donor Platform, all of which were linked to CADAP in some ways, finally joining the AU Development Agency in NEPAD, where he's worked for some years now, and he's currently the head of NEPAD, of CADAP at NEPAD. So I want to welcome these three distinguished guests. Our conversation will cover three broad topics. The first is country ownership of CADAP and CADAP processes. Many people say that CADAP, one of CADAP's biggest challenges has been its failure to secure greater understanding and country ownership. And as a result, maybe we have not achieved as much increased investment into agriculture by governments and also by development partners. To start us off, Augustine, what are the steps, just going to this country ownership issue, what are the steps that a country needs to take in order to be considered CADAP compliant? What are the key elements of a CADAP process that then once a country has gone through, just in the interest of many of our listeners who may not be familiar with the CADAP country processes, so that you could say if you go through these steps or these elements are in place, then you have full ownership of CADAP. Augustine, if you can hear me.
Augustine, we are not hearing you yet. Making sure that we are unmuted.
Yes.
On the
can you hear me now? Good afternoon.
Good morning. Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. Thank you, Robert, for the introduction. I think we are having a very interesting conversation on a topic that is very dear to our hearts. Just quickly to the point that you raised, Robert, there are some key steps that country has to cover for whatever they have in the context of CADAP to be Malabo compliant. Actually, following the adoption of the declaration in Malabo, country has to embark on what we call the domestication of the Malabo declaration. The domestication of Malabo declaration has basically three main deliverables. The country has to take stock of where it stands vis-a-vis CADAP. The country has to come with the Malabo Declaration country roadmap, and the country has to demonstrate that it has popularized the declaration for broadening the outreach for raising awareness, reaching a broader range of stakeholders. So those key elements constitute what we call the domestication of the Malabo Declaration. From there now, the country has to come up with a report on the current status of affairs. We can call it a stock-taking report. We can call it anything else, depending on countries. But at a minimum, we should be in a position to have a clear picture of where the country stands. We also encourage the country to have some clarity on how does it plan to work with the agribusiness and private sector to mobilize investment. This means we could introduce the conversation here around the country agribusiness partnership framework. The country has to formulate a NAIP, a National Agriculture Investment Plan, or to appraise the existing one. After formulating the NAIP, the document has to go through independent technical review by people who are not involved in the formulation in the first place. And this will have to lead to stakeholder dialogue and joint implementation agenda at a country level in an inclusive way, meaning that all key constituencies of CADEM in the country have to be involved in a broader consultation. What comes out of this process is the final National Agriculture Investment Plan, which is NAIP. It has to be implemented. So moving from that step, which was the National Agriculture Investment Plan, formation or appraisal, the second step, we go into the third one, which is the implementation, the actual implementation. How do you operationalize the content of the NAIP to make sure that you generate the type of impact that you want to see on the ground, both in terms of volume and quality? You have to have your spending plan. You have to have a plan on how to work with the private sector. You have to establish your mutual accountability system. You have to have an annual planning that is informed by implementation. So this is what we call implementation, which is an important step, the third one. Now, to see the Malabo compliance, you have to really walk the talk. Your mutual accountability on that Malabo declaration has to be in place. The mechanism for you to be able to collect information, analyze, and inform the kind of progress you are making has to be there. Information has to be collected in a timely manner using the tools and instruments that we have generated in the context of the biennial review process. So if a country is aligning its operations in full on all these four major steps or major components, the country is classified as having aligned its operations to Malabo Declaration. So the NAIP, the country that is implemented, is Malabo compliant. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Augustine, for taking us through those steps. I was just listening to you, and it sounds really smooth and very easy to do. But I wonder, and turning to you, Alice, particularly having worked at country level, you have been a permanent secretary in the thick of things in Rwanda, working off from Kigali, and then later on at the African Union. We still hear people, and I think that they do have a point, saying that there's not so much ownership at country level. It seems that country ownership of CADA processes and some of these steps appears to be a challenge. Why? Why is this such a challenge? And in your opinion, what have we learned about over the years, particularly at about how to improve engagement in CADAP at country level? Because the plan looks really good, the process seems clear, but we still have challenges with ownership at country level. What's your view, what's your take on this, Anne, if you can hear me? Ernest, I'm not sure if you are on, but if you did hear my question.
Ernest, is your connection unmuted on your end? I thought I heard you for a moment there, but it sounded very quiet.
All right, as we try to figure out Ernest's connection, maybe I will ask Fatmata a question. And part of the challenge, Fatmata, is also the role of RECs, which appears to be understated in some cases in CADAP, and some have commented that RECs, and for our uninitiated listeners, RECs are regional economic communities. So ECOWAS is just one of them that covers the West Africa pathway, but the East African community in East Africa and Southern Africa development community in South Africa, and what is known as the Arab Maghreb Union, or UMA for short, in the north, and there's another one in Central Africa. So Fatmata happens to sit in the one that covers what I think is probably the largest, if I'm not wrong. And Fatmata, what value do RECs add, or can RECs add to the CADA process in countries, regions, and at the continental level? If you could hear me.
We're not hearing you yet, Fatmata. Are you unmuted as well? We'll make sure that we've got you unmuted on our end. Please let us know if you can hear us.
Can you hear me?
Oh,
hello.
We hear you. You sound quiet.
You can hear me. Good.
Yes, please go ahead, Fatmata.
I just wanted to be sure that you hear me. All right, so to your question, as you rightly stated, we have different opinions about questions. But just for the purpose of the process, I agree that...
Could you move closer to your microphone and speak a bit louder?
So I was saying that during the first phase of the CADA process, clearly RECs were simply being mentioned as part of the CADA team to implement at the regional and country levels. But in terms of real action, that was not very, very intensive. But by the time we got through to the first 10 years of the CADA process, the role of the RECs have evolved. Because if you look at the implementation modalities for the CADEP 2015-2025, you will see that there is more emphasis laid on optimizing the existing blocks, regional economic communities. And it's mainly because of two reasons, because it has been clearly recognized that for agricultural development to really take its right course, especially at the national level, it cannot be done without the regional economic communities, because RECs seem to have more opportunities to coordinate their country in harmonizing policies, standards, and regulations. And as well, during the process from the first phase to the second phase, we had a lot of improvement in our capacity. So for example, at the ECOWAS level, we had a CADEP advisor. We were able to develop an ECOWAS agricultural policy, and a lot of lessons have been drawn. So you will see that there has been that trend from just being understated to really taking our role as regional economic communities. So the value that RECs can add to the CADA process, clearly, RECs primarily are key to increasing the recognition of the importance and potential added value of regional actions on agriculture. So if you want to see the regional and the countries performing well, it's very important to have the RECs managing their respective countries. And during Augustin's presentation, he spoke about domestication. So if you want to see sustained domestication of the CADA process, clearly the RECs have to take the lead role. We have to facilitate the implementation of also you know, that when the CADEP is developed and is translated into our regional agricultural policy, we have our investment plans that have been developed. So we have a regional agricultural investment plan, and the countries have their national agricultural investment plan. So the RECs easily facilitate implementation of their regional agricultural investment plan. ECOWAS, as an example, to help us do that easily, we established a regional agency for agriculture and food, and it has helped to address capacity issues so that they really focus on the, supervising, monitoring, and tracking how projects and programs are implemented towards regional agricultural investment plans. REGs are also able to establish multi-stakeholder task forces on specific things. At the ECOWAS level, we talk about the food reserve, for example, or value chains. So if you have the RECs managing that, it's able to easily align country by country, as well as in harmonizing, like I said earlier, the process, the policy, and the formulations. So that as a region, ECOWAS, for example, having 15 countries is very easy to coordinate and make sure that we're able to drive all the countries towards achieving the CADEP policy or the CADEP.
Thanks very much for an elaborate and very clear answer. I wonder if Ernest is back with us yet, but as we try to figure out how to get him on, I want to come back to you, Augustine, with a question that I posed to Ernest, and maybe like in a minute, if in your experience you have some hypothesis or some explanation why countries still find it hard to get engaged in the CADA process, and potentially a suggestion on how that could be improved.
Hello, Robert, can you hear me?
Yes, Ernest, I can hear you now. That was
okay.
Actually your question. So,
can we go back to the question?
Yes, and my question was really to pick your mind on why countries are still facing challenges to really owning CADAP in what they do, despite sometimes signing compacts and going through the motions. What have we learned over the years about improving the engagement in CADAP at country level? And this is just drawing from your experience in Rwanda and now at the AUC. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Robert, and thank you, everyone, attending this conversation. It's really good to have this conversation today. After this CADA PP, this successful CADA PP, I think reflecting on where we are in implementing CADA is very important, so that we draw lessons and we also chart the way forward. As you know, Robert and colleagues here, we have done a comprehensive review after 10 years of CADAP implementation before we come up with this chart that you are showing here that draw CADAP implementation guidelines. So the purpose was to see how is CADAP implemented at country level and how CADAP as a framework is actually driving agriculture transformation agenda at country level. So I would say that what we've seen in many countries, the picture is not really harmonized. We have visited, I would say, 6 to 8 countries. We have seen countries where CADAP has been embedded into the country planning system. A country where CADAP is part of the country planning cycle, and we have seen other countries where CADAP is just another project. Countries have developed their NAIPS just to praise a request that was coming from African Union, and they will have like 3 frameworks that are guiding the country planning process. So these are 2 different pictures, and of course we also have countries where we don't have even guiding strategies. Those are countries mostly which have not been able to sign the compact. So what we've seen for the first category is the countries that have actually embedded the CADAP principles, that have been able to align CADAP, align, you know, take CADAP, own it, and embed it to the country planning process, and therefore translate that plan into the budget planning. Augustine has actually mentioned the spending plan. Of course, the spending plan should be the one informing the budget planning process at country level. So today, in what we are trying to do with countries, we are, of course, checking if the NAIP, which are available in countries, are the ones informing the country budget planning process. So what we are seeing in countries is that countries are really different. You have an IEP which is not even informing the country budget planning process, and you have a misalignment even at country level with partners who are supporting those IEPs. Partners have put money into these processes, but when it comes to implementation, because the implementation is guided by the country plan and the budget plan, and when the NAIP is not informing that budget plan, then alignment and harmonization to that plan becomes a very big challenge. And of course, it goes with also coordination, because you can only coordinate a plan which is owned by everyone. You can govern a plan which is owned by everyone. And what we are trying to tell countries is, of course, to make sure that the CADAP important, but alignment to the country planning cycle is also very important if you want countries to implement confidently, you know, in alignment with the aspiration, of course, what is captured in the NAIP. So this is the key lesson, and I think to the countries where they are aligning budget to the where NAIP is informing NAIP, we are also seeing implementation happening very efficiently. Thank you.
Thank you, Anes, and I'm glad that you made this point. It seems like aligning CADAP with the country's own national processes for planning and budgeting is a key lesson for all of us, particularly those listening from African countries who are wondering how to make CADAP stronger in the country. Thanks so much for all the points you made. I'd like to turn our attention, sooner or later I'm going to open it up to our listeners to also ask some questions, but for the moment I'd like to turn our attention to the issue of NAIP, the National Agriculture Investment Plan, and particularly what we consider their utility in the CADAP process. And I have less time, so I'm probably going to ask you to try and see if you could respond in a minute or so. I'll stay with you, Ernest, for now. Why is NAIP, the National Agriculture Investment Plan, considered the tool of choice by the African Union for, you know, ensuring that these continental declarations are implemented in countries? And how does the AU do that? How does it use NAIP to influence the implementation of its CADAP agenda? In a way, you probably began to touch on this, but what's your take on this?
Thank you, Robert. I think NAIP, I mean, we are calling it NAIP, but when it is embedded at country level, it can have different names. For example, come to Rwanda, you will not see anything called NAIP. Of course, in the strategic plan for agricultural transformation, they will say that this is our NAIP. So different countries have different names, but NAIP is a domesticated investment plan at country level. It's a malleable, you know, at country level. It's a malleable declaration, domesticated at country level. And what we are trying to say is that this NAIP of today is different from the NAIP that we used to have because NAIP touches 7 key important commitments which are not necessarily part of the agricultural ministry. It calls for greater coordination because it's discussing not only issues related to agriculture, let's say increased productivity, but also touches on issues that are managed outside of the agricultural ministry, which means that it is important to come up with, you know, greater coordination. So it's a third tool, because if you don't have a plan, you will not know a plan which translates your targets by 2025, because our declaration has a clear target by 2025. If you don't have a plan, you will not be able to also coordinate your interventions at country level. So in respect of CADA principles, making sure that country stakeholders led by government, with the involvement of private sector, kind of non-state actors, come together and agree on a plan that leads to achieving the Malabo target, which is called, let's say, NAIP by African Union jargon, but domesticated and can have a country name, you know, come with, you know, ambitious interventions with clear, policies and investment that leads to those targets is very, very important. And also making sure that this plan, is very clear on what capacity is needed to get it implemented. One is to have ambitions, but also it's important to be clear on how you also strengthen the capacity for operation. So I think there is an element that we need to get into consideration in this discussion. We somehow lose the focus of the content of the NAIP and stick to the process to get a NAIP. But when you get a NAIP, the important thing is to get this NAIP implemented. A NAIP implementation, of course, will be linked to how we evaluate this NAIP, but this is really the central element. How do we support member states? I mean, now all players, development partners, technical partners, private sector, kind of non-state actors, and farmers themselves come together to implement these NAIPs, which have been formulated in a very participatory manner, and translate the ambitions of heads of state. How do we make sure that this is implemented? Of course, you mentioned investment. Investment is very key, but investment will come only if we are if we are clear that what we are going to implement evidently can lead to the targets or to aspirations that are captured in the NAIP. That's why one of the call for Malabo is really to abide to evidence-based planning and, of course, performance-based and peer review embedded in this biennial review that also we'll discuss.
All right. Thanks, Ernest. In a moment, I'm going to go to the metrics of all this, including the biennial review and how different actors are involved. But just to close off on the NAIP, someone was telling me at the CADA PP the other day that only a handful of countries have actually reviewed or reformulated their national agriculture investment plans to reflect the Malabo Declaration. And this is 5 years after the declaration itself, and 5 years before we have to see the results. And I'm wondering, Augustine, what suggestions do you have for speeding up the reformulation? First of all, if you do have the statistics, that would be quite helpful, like how many countries have got Malabo-compliant NAIP, and then what's your one or two suggestions for speeding up that process of getting NAIP to reflect the Malabo Declaration.
Yes, Robert, can you hear me?
Yes,
can hear you loud and clear.
Yes, I think the domestication process, from the experience of the past 3 years, has been a very, how would I call it, kind of slow one. Countries embark on domesticating the Malabo Declaration in their night. But as you would imagine, implementation of something continues to happen. By the time you are done with everything, including the VR, we talk about 2-3 years. What I can say about this is that, yes, it's something that is good to start. It's also good not to for it to drag for too long. Ideally, if you have to spend like 8 months to 12 months to complete the package to make sure that you are fully aligned to Malabo Declaration, is that's very okay. Otherwise, when it drags for far too long, some fatigue starts to kick in. Now, going back to the statistics, you were asking me how many countries can we confidently say are fully Malabo compliant. Fatmata will correct me here if I'm wrong. Maybe except 2 countries in ECOWAS that are not yet fully aligned with their plan. I think out of the 15, 13 are fully Malabo compliant. And when we move to the other regions, Southern Africa and Eastern Africa, the COMESA countries and the SADC countries, including the East African Community countries, we are talking of around 7 countries or so. And now you move central, the country, there is a group of countries at the moment that are working towards domesticating Malabo Declaration into our National Investment Plan. We are working currently with 8 countries in total from within Central, Eastern, and Southern Africa that are also trying to align their operations to the content of Malabo Declaration. Now, one question you were asking me, one point that you want to raise is what is making it so difficult for countries to move and fully embrace the Malabo Declaration? I think it is one thing to commit to do A, B, C, D. Actually doing it is something different. From experience, countries embraced the Maputo Declaration, came up with the National Investment Plan. They were under the impression that resources would flow from somewhere to come and fund the plan that they had put together. That did not materialize because it was important for their own resources, in-country resources to be mobilized to be able to fund the actual implementation. Looking at how countries are behaving today, history seems to be repeating itself. We are also facing challenges with some countries that are really struggling to put the resources that are required for national stakeholder consultations to take place. Again, they are turning to the African institutions to mobilize resources to even bring stakeholders together to agree on the key priorities that have to go into the National Investment Plan. So the ownership, as Ernest mentioned, is very key. It has to start from the beginning. Country has to demonstrate that they are very much in charge. They want to take lead and show the way. Additional support could come from development partners or from African institutions. But the country resources have to be what helps to fuel the process towards having a NIDE that is Malabo compliant. It's only the formulation. There is also another challenge that we are seeing. The biennial review, I'm sure we're going to talk about it in a minute, but the biennial review has created something that we didn't witness before. Countries are struggling to ensure that they have a report that is selling, meaning that they have to improve their score. In doing that, their main focus for some of them is mostly on receiving support to be able to collect the data, inform all the indicators, analyze them, and prepare the report. completely overlooking the need for them to come up with a knife that is Malabo compliant, that is taking into account all the key elements that are captured into the Malabo Declaration. So if a country's focus is more on the general review or scoring high, what about making sure that you have in place a mechanism that is going to create the results that you need to come on track? So this is another challenge that we are facing. So countries are still, for some, waiting to be assisted from outside. But luckily, there are some very there are some countries that are very proactive, that are taking advantage of the lessons that have been learned so far to show the direction to say that, yes, we take full responsibility for what happens on our ground. We have to be the ones setting the tone. And we want to walk the talk. So we are happy
to
know that these
are
many.